Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. Please take a moment and rate the podcast on iTunes. You can do that by going to the iTunes Music Store, then clicking on Podcasts on the left-hand side, Religious Podcasts, and then finally Jewish Podcasts. You'll see the Pardes from Jerusalem podcast, and please review it or give it a rating. Thanks very much for your time on that. This week, Rabbi James Jacobson Meisels discusses Parshat Behar. Rabbi James Jacobson Meisels is a faculty member at Pardes, where his focus is on Jewish mysticism. And now, Rabbi James Jacobson Meisels.
Thank you, Larry. The Mea Shiloh begins by quoting a verse from our Parsha. Dabera b'nei Yisrael v'chulei, v'shavta aret shavat l'adoshem. Speak to the children of Israel, etc., and the land should rest a Sabbath for God. And he continues. Inyan shlosh parshiot ha-nemarin kan, parshat shmita v'parshat dror avadim b'yovel u'parshat ribit, says what is the issue of the three matters, the three sections discussed here. The first is the matter of shmita, the matter of the sabbatical year, the ceasing of working the land every seventh year. The second is the matter of the freeing of the slaves in the yovel year, that slaves are allowed to go free every 50th year. And the third is the issue of taking interest, that it's forbidden to make loans and take interest on those loans. And he says, what is the matter of these three? That is, how are these three elements connected one to another? V'hu sh'Hashem Yitbarach mazhir liYisrael shelo yasimu b'tchunam b'shum davar hanir'eh le'einei adam sh'yochal livtoch bo. And they are that God warns Israel that they should not put their trust in anything which a person can see that he is able to trust in. Because these three warnings, these three matters are all connected to this issue of not having misplaced trust in the world we experience. Why? Are people so terrible that we should never trust them? Do things always go so badly? It seems not. But just that, at a certain fundamental level, we know there is no ultimate security in this world. Things go wrong at every level. No matter how hard we try, no matter how good people's intentions are, and of course sometimes people's intentions aren't so great. But in this world, in this world of ours that we experience, there's no ultimate security. Ve'elu ha-shlosha dvarim, shmita v'yovel v'ribit, hem ba'olam v'shana v'nefesh. And these three things, shmita, the seventh sabbatical year, yovel, that is the freeing of the slaves in the jubilee year, and ribit, taking interest on loans, are in these three categories of world, time, and soul. These three basic categories, which Hasidut engages with in so many ways, in so many dimensions, three categories of our experience in our life, our experience in the world, in the material universe, in space, our experience in time, and our movement through time, the past, the future, and the present, and our experience in soul, the experience of our own personhood, our own psychology. Ki kinyan sedot v'kramim hu kinyan sheyesh l'adam b'olam, asher yichal l'toach bo. Why? Because when somebody buys a field or a vineyard, this is a purchase in the world that a person presumably can trust in. So we buy land. This is the world of Olam. This is the world of the material universe. This is the world of space. And we think we acquire something and we can trust in it. We've got this land now. This is security for us. V'tziva Hashem Yitbarach neged zeh mitzvat shmita. And God can command it against this, the mitzvah of shmita, the mitzvah of the sabbatical year. Haynu shelo yasim adam bitchuno behem v'yirah ki la'Hashem hem. That is that a person should not put his trust in them, in his land, and these things he's acquired, and see rather that they are God's. Ki b'shanat ha-shmita ein la'adam shum hakarat kinyan b'kinyano, v'yirah ki la'Hashem ha'aretz. Because in the time of Shemitah, in the sabbatical year, a person, there is no recognition of someone's ownership of something. That is, if you've got an apple tree in your garden, and it's the Shemitah year, everybody's allowed to come pick your apples. You're not allowed to stop people from picking your apples. They're not your apples. They're whosever apples they want. Anybody can take them. And therefore we see that the land is God's. Now, of course, this is particularly pertinent at this time of financial crisis. Many people, we all thought maybe perhaps that in land, in security, in our houses, perhaps there was some security. Those are the most secure things. And certainly in the ancient Israelite culture and in rabbinic culture, land is the most secure, the most fundamental possession. But here, the Mea Shiloh tells us that the commandment of Shemitah is fact. Just giving over this truth that land, for all its fundamentalness, all the fact that it's actually a piece of earth, is both never entirely and properly ours, and second, never really entirely secure. We think because we have ownership that we actually have control over the land, control over circumstances, that we can trust in it and what it will produce for us. But as we see in the Shemitah, of course, we don't have control. We lose our ownership in just a moment. And of course, this is the fact actually of the impermanence and uncertainty of life in general. We don't really own the land. We can't really determine exactly what the land's going to do. There are so many factors completely outside of our control. But the key, and we'll see how the Meir Shlomo discusses this, is to transform this fact, to not understand it not as a depressing fact, a fact of maybe the vulnerability and fragility of our lives, but a liberating fact. And we'll discuss that more in a moment. V'nevet ha'techa sheyesh l'adam b'zman, ha'neshile shlo miftach sheyasef hon machir hazman, ha'neshi kach ribit, amra Torah, al tikach meito neshech ki karibit, hush lokech machir hazman, kimamar ha'gemara. Right? So he says, but against this idea of trusting in time, that maybe, oh, if I can't trust in things, I can't have others, I can trust in time, over time things will work out, etc. That is that a person will trust that he can amass treasure, he can amass wealth over time. That is, that he can take interest. The Torah says in response to this, you can't take interest from somebody. Because the essence, in fact, of this idea of interest, the essence of taking interest, is that a person takes a money, takes a wage for time. Right? That is, you've loaned somebody money, and the amount of interest you get is related to the amount of time they have the money. So you seem to be earning money off of the time. As the Gemara says, klala de ribita, kol agar nater le asor. But the general principle of rebit is that when you're compensating somebody for waiting, for this idea of time, for postponing a debt, that this is completely forbidden. So now we have two aspects. We have this aspect of land. We might have thought we had security in land. There's no security there. And we might have thought we had security in time, that time can bring us wealth, time can give us security, time can give us something that we lack. But in fact, there's no security in time as well. V'neged kinyan sheish ladam b'nefashot, avadim, v'yichol yitoch b'hem, shishmesh b'hem l'chol tzurchav, neged zet tzivah Hashem yiparach mitzvah dror avadim b'yovel. And against this aspect that we might have thought, well, at least we can trust or we can rely on other people, that they'll do things for us, that they'll work for us. Here, slaves, right? Indentured servants, really. That we can trust that we'll be able to use them in a way for our needs, and they'll fulfill our needs, that other people are going to fulfill our needs. They're going to fulfill the things we need. We can trust in them. No, against this, God also commanded the mitzvah of the freeing of slaves in the Jubilee year. Hainu sheyira ha'adam she'en lo kinyan begufam. That is, a person should recognize that he has no ownership of their bodies. V'tzirich l'shalcham l'chofshi, v'gam be'et heyotam avadim tziva Hashem berach shelo yarda bo b'farach. And even at the time when they're the slaves, or even before they go free, you have limitations on how you can use them. You can't work, for instance, work them with cruelty. You can't make the labor too hard. Hanu sheyavin she'en gufo shayachlo. That is, that he should understand that he does not own this person. He doesn't own this person's body. So this is the third challenge. We might have thought, well, we can't rely on land, can't rely on the natural world, we can't rely on space. We can't rely on time, because time shifts, it changes. We can't actually rely on that as a way to amass the things we need in the world. Maybe we can rely on people, but we can't even rely on people, right? You don't actually own people. And maybe on a deeper level, you don't even own yourself. That ultimately, there's no true ownership, whether in the realm of space, whether in the realm of time, or whether in the realm of self. Ultimately, everything is owned by God. We think we own ourselves. We think we own the land. We think we own our time. Our time is ours to use as we wish, to give as we wish. But ultimately, this perspective says that this is a mistaken view. That actually our idea of ownership is, in fact, false, and in fact, imprisons us. We become slaves ourselves to this very idea of ownership. In truth, there is no security in any of these realms. None of them can make us secure. We all know. However much we trust, however good people's intentions are, however much we try to predict what's going to happen with the land, what's going to happen in our time, what's going to happen with the people in our life, none of these elements can bring us security. And as long as we look to them for security, we will be disappointed. As long as we look to them because we think we own them and can control them as ways of making our life secure and stable, we will experience the inevitable impermanence of life, the inevitable change of life as pain and suffering. So what do we do? What do we do? V'tziva Hashem yiparach elu shlosha mitvot. Hainu shenirei ha'olam v'ashana v'hanefesh. Ein shum mivtach la'adam behem. Rak Hashem hu ha'mivtach ha'adam. So God commanded these three mitzvot, that is, that it should be seen that the world, that is space, and the year, that is time, and the soul, that is the person, that there is no possibility of a person trusting them. There's no security there. There's no stability there. It is only in God, which is the trust of a person. Trust, stability, can only be found with God. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean that trust can only be found with God? We could think that it means material, in a very material sense. The trust actually is in the land. We actually have to trust in God and trust God will provide our material needs. But in fact, we know that's false, right? We just see it in the world. We see it in our own lives, in other people's lives, that in fact, people's material needs are not always provided for. So that's really not the sense in which we can trust in God. We might think similarly, it's God's working in time, that God will make things turn out in the end. But of course, we know that's also not true. God doesn't make things turn out in the end. And also people, even from the divine aspect, aren't always reliable in the end. All those ways in which we might think we want to rely on the world, even if we try to put them onto God and see them as coming from God, still, all of them are unstable, they're uncertain. None of them give us the kind of stability and security that we hope for in life. Moreover, from a Hasidic perspective, where everything is God, this question itself is bizarre. What does it mean to rely on God as something external when our very selves, our beings, everything we encounter, is the divine before us? And in fact, the Me'a Shiloach is one of the most radical proponents of that principle, saying because of the aspect, because of the reality of everything being divine, that in fact, everything is ultimately in God's hands anyway, that we have no ultimate control. And so what does it mean then to trust in God? What is this security, this trust that we are looking for? It seems that this trust ultimately is not a trust in any particular result, because in fact, we know that any result can happen, any outcome can happen. But rather is trust in our ability to open to the divine presence and joy in any situation. The security in God is recognizing our own divine nature, not recognizing and not knowing that things will turn out all right, but knowing that somehow we will be able to be present and all right with however things turn out. In that sense, we gain security precisely by recognizing insecurity and, as the Me'a Shiloach constantly preaches, not resisting, not needing it to be differently than it is. And in that sense, the liberation that the Me'a Shiloach is talking about here comes from us not being attached to a certain outcome, but being open to the way reality is right now. To recognize, as he says, that all is the will of God. Even the fear of God is in the hands of heaven. This doesn't mean that we don't act, but it means we do the best we can. We act, and when things sometimes turn out otherwise, we let it go. And that's why this recognition of insecurity is actually not a depressing insight. It's not a depressing insight because, in fact, we all know it's true already. The reality of insecurity is a truth in all of our lives and an unavoidable truth. The question is not whether it's reality or not. The question is, what do we do with that reality? We can resist it. We can experience pain because of it. Or in our acceptance and openness to it as all the will and expression in some sense of divinity, we can be willing to accept it and be willing to open to it, even with joy. And that's why the Me'a Shiloach continues, V'lezeh siyem achar parshiot ha'elu, ani Hashem Elokeichem, asher hotzeiti etchem mi'eretz Mitzrayim, latet lechem et eretz Kanaan. That's why he says it ends after these parshiot, after these three mitzvot, that God says, I am the Lord your God, who brought you forth from Egypt to give you the land of Canaan. V'hu shelo yidmeh adam benafsho, shenitmato hashva'ota b'mash nasru lo kol advarim ha'ele. Says, because we shouldn't think, this verse hints at, and I'll explain in a second, that we shouldn't think that all these prohibitions, all the things we're not allowed to do, indicate some kind of limitation in the influence or power and extent of God. We shouldn't think we're being prohibited from doing certain things because God isn't there, let's say. That place of tumah, that place of impurity is a place of the absence of the divine. No, we shouldn't think that. Lezeh ne'amar, ani Hashem Elokeichem, asher hotzeiti etchem mi'eretz Mitzrayim. Concerning this, it said, I am the Lord your God, who brought you forth from the land of Egypt. Perush, the explanation of it is, Hatavot, she'inam b'gedusha, hem b'meitzar v'tzimtzum. The good things, the pleasures, the things of the world, right, which are not in holiness, right, the not holy parts, are in contraction and constriction. That is, it's not that God is absent there. We shouldn't think that those things that are prohibited because God isn't there. It's simply that they're not skillful for us. Because these things are restricted and constricted, they're trapped. If we enter them, we too will become constricted and trapped. And therefore, it's not wise for us to enter this area. It's not because divine isn't there, because we don't know how to deal with it properly. If we enter those pleasures, those tovot, we too can be trapped. We can get imprisoned. And we've all had this experience of pursuing some pleasure, let's say, some thing that's seemingly good in the world. It can be anything. It can be ice cream. It can be a new car. It can be any of the things that we like. And that actually doing that, instead of making us feel open, instead of making us feel connected, makes us feel small and limited, makes us feel constricted, addicted, craving, jealousy, guarding our share. These are all experiences of constriction rather than openness. And the Me'ah Shiloach is saying here that the commandments are about keeping us away from the places that will produce restriction, and bringing us to places that will produce openness. And therefore the verse continues, Letet lechem et eretz Kanan, to give them you the land of Canaan. Hainu atavot she'Hashem yibarach rashpia lanu yubgdusha. That is that the tavot, the pleasures that God will grant us, will emanate to us, will be in holiness. V'nochal lihitpashet behem. And we will be able to spread forth, to expand with them. There's nothing wrong with goodness and pleasure, but it can be dangerous. It can lead to constriction. Or, when it's given to us in holiness in the right place, then it gives us the possibility of expansion and liberation. The problem then here is not the pleasure of the things of the world, but the problem is how we interact with them. Mitzvot here are discipline then, to allow us to interact with the world in a healthy, liberating way, rather than an enslaving way. Indeed, this, for the Me'ah Shiloach, is the meaning of leaving Egypt. That we have a new kind of relationship with the world, a new way of interacting with the world. That we leave the narrowness of Egypt, the means of Egypt which lead us towards addiction and imprisonment, and instead interact with goodness and pleasure on the level of holiness. A level which leads us to expansiveness, to expansion, to openness, and to liberation. Ki Hashem yibarach yanchil tovab kedusha nachala bli meitzarim. Because God will bequeath us an inheritance of goodness, of pleasure, and holiness. An inheritance which has no constriction, which has no boundaries, which has no borders. That is, the goal here really is the goal of liberation. The experience of pleasure, of goodness, of presence in the world, with openness, with boundlessness, without the constriction of Mitzrayim. And what the Me'ah Shiloach points out here in this drasha is that in fact there are two fundamental ways in which we get trapped in the prison of Mitzrayim, in which we get trapped in the prison of narrowness. The first is an unwise demand for security from the things of the world, whether that's space and objects and material possessions and wealth, whether that's time, or whether that's the people around us or ourselves. We demand security, we demand trust, and we are inevitably, even in ourselves, disappointed and hurt. The other element we seek for it is in the pleasures of the world. We seek the sense of openness, of satisfaction, of wholeness in the experience of pleasure. But many of those pleasures, many of those good things of the world, in fact lead us in the other direction, toward constriction and narrowness. And the solution the Me'ah Shiloach then suggests here is precisely the path of the mitzvot. The path of the mitzvot which make clear that by restricting ourselves, by pointing ourselves in the direction of healthy, wise pleasures, by bringing to ourselves the acknowledgement that there is no ultimate security in the world, and a security not comes from not grabbing or grasping for some ground, but simply by acknowledging that we can be present and open and connected to the divine, even in the groundlessness and uncertainty of the world. It is in those two insights that we leave the narrowness of Mitzrayim and enter the wide open spaces of Eretz Yisrael.
Thank you, Rabbi Jacobson Mizels. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Tell your friends, and thanks for tuning in. We'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.